Let me begin by thanking you, not just for tonight, but for being here all week, and for encouraging me and Bubba so much. I thought this afternoon of what to say, and I was reminded of what Paul wrote to the Philippian brethren in chapter 1, where he said, "I thank my God in all remembrance of you, always in every prayer of mine, for you all making my prayer with joy because of your partnership in the gospel from the first day until now. And I am sure of this, that he who began a good work in you will bring it to completion at the day of Jesus Christ. It is right for me to feel this way about you because I hold you in my heart, for you all partakers with me of grace, both in my imprisonment and in the defense and confirmation of the gospel. For God is my witness, how I yearn for you all with the affection of Christ Jesus. And it is my prayer that your love may abound more and more with knowledge and all discernment, so that you may approve what is excellent, and so be pure and blameless for the day of Christ, filled with the fruit of righteousness that comes through Jesus Christ to the glory and praise of God. I think of you all often, and I pray about you, and I am so thankful for you, and I can identify so much with what he said there, even the imprisonment after a few days with Bubba and Brent. But I am so grateful for the love that we share and the grace that we share through God and with each other. And I'm thankful for the love you have for me and Bubba, that you have invited us here this third time. You're getting close to the record. There is a church that's done four, but they stopped at that point. I don't know what that's all about. But I certainly am thankful and do pray that you continue to grow. And I'll tell you this, I was thinking today, we were joking around with Grace. Brent kind of had his bad, horrible adulting day yesterday, and I've had one of those afternoons, and we were saying, just don't ever grow up. And we were telling her not to grow up, and she said, well, you can't do that, which is true. But I said, you know, if I could, I tell you, when I would go back, I'd go back probably to when I met Brent and Bubba. Some good days that we had and some fun times. And I remember songs like Dare to Stand, like Joshua. We sing that every Thursday night, The Great Redeemer. Our God, He is alive. To give you an idea how old we are, the building that we sing those songs in is now condemned and you can't stand in it. That's a true story, by the way. But I'll never forget a good friend of ours that we share in common. Her name is Lori. She wrote in my yearbook, and I'll share this with you guys, that she said, when the end comes, I'll be waiting for you so that we can walk into heaven hand in hand together. And what a beautiful thought, and I can't wait to being able to do that and to be with you all when this world ends, in a place that is so much better than this place, and look forward to that time. Thank you so much. We've had a great week. We had a great afternoon, despite my adulting that I had to do. Just a great, great day. Tonight, I want to talk to you about the young hero and the horrible giant. You ought to be able to figure out what that's all about from the title. If not, where have you been? The story of David and Goliath is one of the best known stories of the Bible, maybe next to Noah's Ark. It is a sports analogy. You cannot watch a game that has an underdog that is a huge underdog without somebody making a reference to David and Goliath. Even non-religious people know this story. And it becomes so popular because we like to cheer for the little guy, the underdog. Notice I skipped the Bubba joke there. And that is the traditional interpretation of the story. Because when we read this story, what we think about when it comes to David and Goliath is we think about, well, the bigger they are, the harder they fall. So you just go in and you battle with God, and you may not be as big and powerful as it is, but with God on your side, you can defeat the giants in your life. And I'm not saying that's not the right interpretation, but I want to share with you tonight a different interpretation. Because when we read that story that way, I want you to know something. You know, when we read that story, we interpret that way, what we're really thinking about? Me. I'm reading the story of David and Goliath and thinking, well, how does that apply to me? How does that make me? And by the way, the reason we interpret it that way is because this is the story about the young hero and the horrible giant. And you notice that we don't really identify with the horrible giant guy. We're the hero. But I want to apply that a little differently. I want to ask you the question tonight. How do we see Jesus in this story? I want to see Jesus. As we begin the story, the Israelites are at war. And they're at war with a common enemy. It's under the reign of Saul. The enemy is the Philistines. That is a common enemy that Jephthah fought, Shamgar, Samson. They have been around for quite some time. They were supposed to be, according to Joshua, completely removed from the land. And yet, for hundreds of years, they had been allowed to coexist, and not really coexist peacefully, because they've been fighting for all of that time. And during the days of Saul, we see them at war. We see him at war in 1 Samuel chapter 13. That's the setting when he's at war with the Philistines, where Saul offers a sacrifice because he's too impatient to wait for Samuel. You remember that? In 1 Samuel 14 is a story where Jonathan tells his armor bearer, hey, you know what? We'll go up there to the Philistine camp. And if they tell us to come up, well, that means God's delivered us into their hands. And what happens is Jonathan and his armor bearer almost single-handedly defeat the Philistines that day by routing all of them towards Israel. And in 1 Samuel chapter 17, they're at war again. And we meet this terrible, horrible giant named Goliath, who is a champion. In fact, he is a massive champion. If you look at 1 Samuel chapter 17, starting in verse 4, it says there, and there came out from the camp of the Philistines a champion named Goliath of Gath, whose height was 6 cubits and a span. He had a helmet of bronze on his head, and he was armed with a coat of mail. And the weight of the coat was 5,000 shekels of bronze. And he had bronze armor on his legs, and a javelin of bronze slung between his shoulders. The shaft of his spear was like a weaver's beam, and his spearhead weighed 600 shekels of iron, and his shield bearer went before him. If we kind of guess at that, and sometimes people use different measurements, but the pretty much standard to say is that Goliath is 9 feet 9 inches tall. 9 feet 9 inches tall. The armor he is wearing weighs over 115 pounds. And the head of the spear weighs 13 pounds. Not the whole spear, just the head of the spear. He is massive. And he's not just massive, but he has a massive attitude to go along with what he's doing. Keep reading there in verse 8. It says there in verse 8, he stood and shouted to the ranks of Israel, "Why have you come out to draw up for battle? Am I not a Philistine? And are you not servants of Saul? Choose a man for yourselves and let him come down to me. If he is able to fight and kill me, then we will be your servants. But if I prevail against him and kill him, then you shall be our servants in service." And the Philistine said, "I defy the ranks of Israel this day. Give me a man that we may fight together." When Saul and all Israel heard these words of the Philistine, they were dismayed and greatly afraid. Just somebody come out and fight me. Who has the courage to represent Israel? Rather than having a big war, it'll just be one-on-one, mano a mano. And whoever wins, wins the war. That seems simple enough. Except for every man in Israel hid. And by the way, that went on for 40 days. For 40 days. Saul and Jonathan and all of the mighty men of Israel hid out in their tents, afraid of the giant. Until one day, David shows up. We don't know a whole lot about David. We make a lot of assumptions about David. The reality is, we sing that song, "Only a Little Boy David, Only a Babbling Brook. Only a little boy David, five little stones he took." My favorite part is when it goes round and around and around and around. That's my favorite part. But you know what the reality is? David probably wasn't a boy in the story. In fact, if you look at it, he's at best an older teenager and probably in his 20s. We're not going to get into all of that, but we make assumptions that just because he was kept home, that he was the youngest, that he was a little boy. But the reality is that all of David's brothers, except for the three, it seems, were kept at home. And he was just sent to go and to check on them. And so we have this issue here. And I tell you what the main thing is I think we make David a little boy because we like to kind of embellish the story a little bit. We got to make it better than it is. I don't know about you, but it doesn't need much embellishing. I mean, I'm a big guy. We know that. But I got to tell you, Goliath is another 3.5 feet taller than me. And he wears armor that weighs more than some of the people in this room right now. And he threw a spear that was taller than Bubba. You don't have to embellish the story. It's scary enough just the way it's written. And in 1 Samuel 17 and verse 24, it says, "All the men of Israel, when they saw the man, they fled and were afraid." And even when David goes and tries to be the one who volunteers, I want you to notice what they do. His brother Eliab, basically in verse 28, says, "You need to mind your business and go back home. You're just a troublemaker." And even Saul in verses 32 and 33 says, "Let no man's heart fail because of him. Your servant will go," David says, "and fight this Philistine." And Saul says to David, "You're not able to go against the Philistine and fight. You're just a youth. This man has been a man of war from his youth." By the way, just to reinforce his age, I will remind you that immediately upon getting home, Saul places David in charge of a group of men. You're supposed to be 20 years old to fight in Israel. What he means there from youth is not that he's a boy, but that David is a lot younger than Goliath here in this story. But David knew. He said, I can defeat him. And he goes on here in verses 34 through 37. He says there, starting in verse 34, "Your servant used to keep sheep for his father. When there came a lion or a bear and took a lamb for the flock, I went after him and I struck him and I delivered it out of his mouth. And if he rose against me, I caught him by his beard and I struck him and I killed him. Your servant has struck down both lions and bears, and this uncircumcised Philistine shall be like one of them, for he's defied the armies of the living God." And David said, "The Lord, who delivered me from the paw of the lion and the paw of the bear, will deliver me from the hand of the Philistine." And Saul said to David, "Go, and the Lord be with you." You may read that and think, well, you know, David, that sounds great, but Goliath is a lot more terrifying than a lion or a bear. Tell you what, you come to Memphis, we have a great cat house in the zoo, and I'll get permission for you to go grab a lion by the beard and see how that works out. See, the reality is, none of us take on a lion or a bear by ourselves. And David says, look, there's been a lion, there's been a bear. I have killed them barehanded by the power of God. And if God will deliver me from a lion or a bear, He will deliver me from Goliath. And you know what happens? David defeats Goliath. Look at verse 41 just to remind ourselves. The Philistine moved forward and came near to David with a shield bearer in front of him. And when the Philistine looked and saw David, he disdained him, for he was but a youth, ruddy and handsome in appearance. And the Philistine said to David, "Am I a dog that you come to me with sticks?" And the Philistine cursed David to his gods, by his gods. In verse 44,
The Philistine said to David, come to me and I will give your flesh to the birds of the air and the beasts of the field. Then look at 45. Then David said to the Philistine, you come to me with a sword and with a spear, with a javelin. I come to you with the name of the Lord of hosts, the God of the armies of Israel, whom you have defied. This day the Lord will deliver you into my hand, and I will strike you down and cut your head, and I will give the dead bodies of the host of the Philistines this day to the birds of the air and the wild beasts of the earth, that all the earth may know that there is a God in all in Israel, and that all this assembly may know that the Lord saves not with sword and spear, for the battle is the Lord's, and He will give you into our hand. David takes that stone out of his bag and he puts it in a sling and he throws it, and it goes up and it hits the Philistine in the head. David goes and gets his sword and he cuts off the Philistine's head. Now, let me tell you what I'm supposed to tell you at this point in the application phase. I'm supposed to say things like, I've got 5 points for you from this story. First, present yourself for service, just like David did. And secondly, stick to what you know. David didn't use armor, he just used a sling that he used. Third, when people give you a hard time, don't give up, persevere. Fourth, you run to battle in faith, you run to the enemy. And fifth, God will slay the giants in your life. You've heard that sermon before. I've preached it. Bubba's preached that sermon before. And I'm not saying there's anything wrong with it. But the reality is, even on Bubba's clock, I still got about 15, 20 minutes left. And that's not the sermon we're going to look at tonight. Because what I want to do is see Jesus in the story. And the first thing I want you to know is that in this story, we are not David, but rather we are Israel. We are Israel. Perhaps you've never thought about that, but you and I are in a daily predicament where there is an enemy, an adversary, who daily taunts us and encourages us to try to fight him one-on-one. For over 40 days, Goliath taunts Israel, and they hide. They are helpless. They are paralyzed by fear. Because this wasn't a typical battle. One-on-one determines the winner. I wonder nobody volunteered. How would you like to be the person who thought they could defeat Goliath and ends up losing the entire war because you couldn't? And so they retreated. But the parallel here to Jesus and to our time is that Goliath is a parallel to Satan, because every day Satan taunts you and I. He may not come out in a way that we can hear or see, but he is taunting us and tempting us to do things we shouldn't do, putting pressure on us to try to resort to fear and fall back and no longer trust in God to deliver us, and to turn away from God and to think that we can't be victorious. And he's described this way in 1 Peter 5 and verse 8. Be sober-minded, be watchful. Your adversary, the devil, prowls around like a roaring lion seeking whom he may devour. Just like Goliath was the adversary of Israel, so too is Satan our adversary. And I'm going to tell you something else. He wants you to believe that you can defeat him all by yourself. Satan wants us to fight him alone. You ever thought about that? Because that's when he always wins. Because we can't defeat him by ourselves. But then you have the hero of the story. And there are a lot of similarities, by the way, between David and Jesus in this story. For instance, like David, Jesus was sent by his father. In 1 Samuel 17, 17 through 18, Jesse says to David, take for your brothers an ephah of parched grain and these 10 loaves and carry them quickly to the camp of your brothers, and take these 10 cheeses to the commander of the thousands. See if your brothers are well and bring some token from them. Jesse says, you go down to the camp. I'm sending you to check on your brethren. And we know Jesus was sent by His Father. Passages like John 3:16, but what about 1 John 4:14? We've seen and testified that the Father has sent His Son to be the Savior of the world. It's also interesting to take notice that like David, Jesus was rejected by his brother. David is told by his brother Eliab in verse 28 of 1 Samuel 17, "You just go home and leave this stuff alone." As we noticed this morning, in John 7 and verse 5, it said, "For not even his brothers believed in him." Not even his brothers believed in him. And another parallel is that like David, Jesus was strengthened by his experience. You remember what David said to Saul? "I watched my father's sheep. And when the lion came in, I killed the lion. And when a bear came in, I killed the bear. And if God can deliver me from the bear and the lion, He'll deliver me from this giant." David learned from his experiences. We don't normally think of Jesus that way, but it's interesting. Hebrews 5 and verse 8 says, "Although He was a son, He learned obedience through what He suffered." Jesus learned. Think about that. He learned obedience for what He suffered. But the greatest comparison, perhaps, is the fact that like David, Jesus is the sole representative in this battle. David's the one that goes out and defeats Goliath. And all of the armies watched, but none of them helped. And here, we need to see that Jesus has really done the same thing. Over in Romans chapter 5, there's a couple of passages I'd like to read with you. Romans chapter 5. Starting in verse 6. This is a well-known passage. "For while we were still weak, at the right time, Christ died for the ungodly. For one will scarcely die for a righteous person, though perhaps for a good person one would even dare to die. But God shows His love for us, and that while we were still sinners, Christ died for us." Skip on down to verse 18 with me. "Therefore, as one trespass led to condemnation for all men, so one act of righteousness leads to justification and life for all men. For as by one man's disobedience the many were made sinners, so by the one man's obedience the many will be made righteous." Just as sin entered the world through one man, Paul says it's going to come, righteousness and salvation comes through one man, Jesus. And Jesus died, as Romans 5, 6 through 8 says, He died so that we could have that victory over sin. And the reality is, sometimes we talk about works and grace and what it is, but I tell you what, here's the truth about the gospel. Without Jesus dying, you can't be saved. He did the hard work for us. That's why it's called grace and mercy. There's not enough works you can do to earn it. It was something He was sent to give us. And what happened at Calvary, and then in that tomb that was found empty, where that resurrection was the final blow to Satan, removing, as the scriptures say, his final bit of power, is that Jesus defeated our adversary once for all. Happened because Jesus was willing to go fight on our behalf. But the other comparison is that just like Israel, we all get to share in that victory. In 1 Samuel chapter 17, in verse 51 through 53, there's that imagery there that David ran and stood over the Philistine, took his sword and drew it out of its sheath and killed him and cut his head off with it. And when the Philistines saw their champion was dead, they fled. And notice verse 52, "And the men of Israel and Judah rose with a shout,
and pursued the Philistines as far as Gath and the gates of Ekron, so that the wounded Philistines fell on the way from Sharon as far as Gath and Ekron, and the people of Israel came back from chasing the Philistines and they plundered their camp. David won the battle, but who got to enjoy the spoils of victory? All of Israel and Judah. He defeated the Philistines. Israel got to share the victory. Well, guess what? By the way, it's after this in chapter 18 that they give David credit for that. Saul struck down his thousands, David his 10,000s. They knew who won, didn't they? But we all share in Christ's victory over sin as well. Just as we read in Romans 5, there 18 through 19, through one man righteousness will come. The fact is that you and I, when we are able to be obedient and choose to do that and come to God through Christ, we are offered the ability to enjoy the plunder of Jesus' victory over Satan. We are given freedom from the bondage of sin, and we are offered what John 3:16 describes as eternal life. Jesus lets us share in the victory. He didn't just keep all of that for himself. He allows you and I to share those blessings. Jesus' victory is our victory. He slain the giant of sin for us. Can I tell you, I think that makes a better story and application than telling me that I can kill the giants in my life. My son wants to preach one day, he says, and so he's constantly doing invitations and so forth. And he had the invitation the other night, and he came in and he said to me that he was doing the invitation. I said, well, what do you want to do it on? He said, well, I really want to do it on Isaiah, but you really can't do an invitation from Isaiah. It's just about Israel. My response is, well, you know, that's really what Philip did with the eunuch in Acts 8. He started in Isaiah and he taught Jesus to the eunuch. I hope this week what we've been able to see is that we should be able to take any of these stories and teach somebody Jesus. I think one of the things that we do too much is when we read these stories, we think about ourselves first. What do I learn about me? And I'm not saying that's bad, but what is more important is to be able to take these stories and to teach people about Jesus. Let me tell you something. You can take this story of David and Goliath and what we shared tonight, and you can have a conversation with a friend about what Jesus has done through this story. Teach them what God has done for all of us. You can show them Jesus. You can show them that this victory is offered to them. A story of many stories. All those stories really point to one. Jesus the Christ was sent to live for us and to die. And He was buried. And He rose from the grave. The tomb was empty. And that means you and I can be reconciled to God and have the certain hope of entering into those gates one day and spending eternity with each other. I pray that you will see the story of many stories, not just this week, but as you study throughout all of those ancient texts that so often we relegate to Sunday school for children. Look for Jesus and share Him with others. Thank you so much for the week that we've had together.